জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জবি হরি, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জবি হরি, প্রতি প্রতি বাসুদনন্দন প্রচন্দন বাসুদনন্দন গজচন্দন জানিবন রাজন প্রচন
today, this afternoon, I wanted to ask everyone a question. Did the chicken come first or the egg? People have been discussing this for centuries. Which came first? Anybody want to give a guess or a...
The chicken
came first. Okay. Why do you say that?
Because when the Munis, the rishis, started creating, they created the species first, immediately. And then, you know, the species procreated.
Okay. Anyone else? Nope, they're not going to argue with that one. He's got some inside knowledge, maybe? No one? Okay, well, I have a different answer than that. And it's from the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, he is the seed-giving father of all living entities. So, if the seed came first, right? True? Okay. So Krishna says, O son of Prita, know that I am the original seed of all existence. The intelligence of the intelligent and the prowess of all powerful men. And that is 7:10. And he also says a bit later on in the 14th chapter, it should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. Okay, so there Krishna is saying that he is the seed-giving father. So it might appear that the chicken came first, but Krishna was first giving the seed, which made the egg, which made the chickens, that could carry on, right? And really, if you think about it, it's such a perplexing question if you don't know about Krishna. You know, how did people come along? Everything that's on this planet, how did it perpetuate? How did it start? Right? But right there, Krishna tells us how it started and how it goes on. Also, in the invocation of the Shishupanishad, the Personality of Godhead says, it's Om Purnam Adaha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udashate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishate. The Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete whole. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. And because he is a complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Okay, so this is Krishna. This is Krishna. And I was thinking about that because the other morning, I woke up having just had a dream about the devotees in the kitchen getting really excited that they had so many wonderful seeds being planted and so many wonderful vegetables and things coming into the kitchen that they could cook so nicely with. And when I woke up, immediately I thought of that verse in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is the seed-giving father of all living entities. And I started thinking about the Upanishad and how everything's a complete whole. And how do we see this? Really, if we're totally engrossed in just technology and things, it's hard to see sometimes. But if you take a little bit of a sneak peek at the material nature in the way of nature, it's so obvious that it's a complete whole and all the units work together. So I was thinking, we have bees, you know, and the bees are so necessary in this world because they do all the pollination of all of our fruits, vegetables, anything that's growing. You see them out when there's vegetables growing and they're just fruiting. The bees are working like anything out there. And they're bringing back their legs. Have any of you seen bees when they're coming back to the hive? they have all this pollen. They look like they're wearing yellow boots. And they're flying into their hive and they're doing their work. And they all work together. So not only are they getting honey, which they share with us, and they use themselves, but also they're pollinating all of our vegetables. Then we have the cows. I was looking at the cows and I was thinking, it's so amazing. One of our fields, we haven't been able to put the cows on because there's no fences, and then they get into everybody's everything and do all kinds of damage, right? So we've been keeping them in two fields that we have. And those two fields look so much better than the other one. So my husband got the extension agent to come out, and he was looking around. He said, you need to put fertilizer on here. And then he said, there's chemical fertilizer. He said, well, we don't use chemicals. He said, well, then you have to get your cows out here. So the cows, they eat the grass. They pass cow dung everywhere. Then that fertilizes all the grass. They give milk, or they do work. Then again, they fertilize the grass. The grass comes, they eat the grass, they give the milk. It's a perfect circle, right? The cow dung can be used for so many different things besides. They give so much that it's more than fertilizing. It can be used for fire. It can be used for so many things. I don't know if you've ever burnt cow dung. Someone told us it's really good for keeping mosquitoes away. So we burnt some. We had some dried cow dung patties, and it smells so fragrant. You would think you were burning some kind of very light incense. It's so nice. And it does keep away the mosquitoes. And it's good for puffing in your beehive when you're going to open it and check out what's going on in there. So all of these things go together. Then I was thinking the earth. The earth gives us a place to plant the seeds. It gives us everything we need to eat, and the cows need to eat, the rabbits. This morning when I was coming to Mangalarty, there was a rabbit running across the road, then there was a deer going across the road and our driveway, and then right a little bit farther, there was a fox sticking his head out looking around. And I'm thinking, here's the chain that goes along. The fox is out there looking for the rabbit. The rabbit's seeing the fox and running off to go in their holes. And, you know, they're all living off the earth, right? And then water. Right now we're hearing the thunder, right? That's clouds. And the clouds are so important in this world. Because so much of this earth is water. What is it? Two-thirds of the earth or more is composed of water. But that salted water we can't drink. Has anybody drank any salted water? When we were living in South Africa, the African ladies would always say, if you go to the beach, bring back a gallon of salt water. And they would drink it for a purification of their body. But it's really hard on the body. It's hard on the system. But, you know, it's hard to drink. You couldn't just drink it all the time as water. So the clouds come, the sun comes first, and it evaporates some of the water from the ocean, and then it becomes purified into the clouds. And then the clouds come over the earth, like it's just going to do now, and all the rain comes down, and it's perfect for a human to drink. When we were in South Africa, there was not much water underground. So you'd catch water and drink it. You'd have to purify it so all the mosquitoes and larvae and stuff didn't. But that's what we drank, and it's such nice water. And to bathe in made your skin so soft, and really nice water. But then it goes through the ground, and here it goes through all the lime rock, and it's purified more, and then it comes out of our wells into our taps and perfect drinking water. So the sun and the clouds are so important. And the water, I mean, even our bodies are made of mainly water. So much water we have to drink. So this is all, it all works in a perfect, complete system. It's only us that get in the way of trying to think that we are the supreme controllers of everything. Right? And we all have this to a certain extent. It's the false ego, ahankara. We're thinking we can do something in this material world. That we're important, and that what we do is important, and that we can do something important and control things, make things happen, make things not happen. But after a while, we realize, actually, Krishna, he's the supreme controller. Actually, the first verse, the first mantra in the Shirish Upanishad, Ishavasyamidam sarvam yatkinchat jagajan jagat tena chattena bunjita magradaha kisasvidanam. Everything animate and inanimate that is within this universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota. And one must not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Who do they belong to? Krishna, yes. So knowing that, we take what's necessary for ourselves, right? And we take what's necessary for serving the Lord, because it's his. It's everything is his. Whatever we have, whatever we do, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, it should be made as an offering. Every penance that we do, like tomorrow, Shri Balaram Jayanti, and we fast until noon. So that is for Balaram's pleasure. We're looking to get the pleasure of the Lord. That's our main mission in life, is to get the Lord's pleasure, to have him pleased. I remember in this during this time, the summertime in Mayapur, we stayed there one summer, and every day practically there was some festival. Like they would have these pools of water, they would bring the deities and set them inside, and there'd be a little fountain, and I thought, how nice, and they'd be sitting in a little flower house. And I thought, during this hot summer, wouldn't that be nice sitting in the middle of a pond in a flower, beautiful smelling flower house with water flowing so it's cooling, you know? So if you, for Krishna, we're sweating like anything. It was so hot. But you want to go see Krishna having pleasure. And that gives you pleasure. It's just like when we come to the temple and we see Krishna dressed so nicely, and Srimati Radharani, and Gaurimitai. It's so pleasing to the heart. You just feel like dancing and chanting. It's wonderful. Because Krishna is pleased. I was saying today, I mean, look at Shyam's face. He's smiling so much. He has such a sweet smile on his face. So he's pleased with everyone who's come. Because Krishna is a person. He's a person. He has likes. He has things he likes us to do, and he likes to see us do. You know, and even if it's a bit of austerity, it's for Krishna. We offer that to Krishna, that austerity. And we make advancement like that. That's the secret to spiritual life, is devotional service. It's a secret. But it's an open secret to all of you, because you've come today. So this devotional service can be done in all types of ways. We all have different likes and dislikes, and what we're good at. And anything that we're good at, we can do for Krishna. It's amazing. And put that smile on Shyam's face. Because it's such a wonderful thing to see. So whatever we can do. I mean, all of us have some expertise in some area. Even if it's sweeping the floor and cleaning, that's such a wonderful thing to do for Krishna. I remember when I first joined the temple, it was garlands and cleaning, and always cleaning at Bhaktivedanta Manor. And they had wood floors in the temple room at that time. And it was so hard to clean. They were old floors, really old, and cleaning and cleaning and more dirt. Every time it was always so much dirt, and, you know, but it was so blissful. There was Radha Gokulananda sitting there watching us clean his floor. And it was so nice. Because you're thinking, Krishna is a person. He's seeing you. And that's such an important thing. Even in the morning when we chant our japa, when we do our sadhana, Krishna is there. He's seeing us. He's hearing us. I mean, I say this practically every time I give class, but Krishna's cell phone number is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he answers upon hearing. Okay? Most of us carry our phones around, right? And it's immediately, we're on it, we're seeing it, well, Krishna watches us as well, and he hears when we chant his name, or when we talk about him to each other, we glorify him. It's such an important thing when we chant his holy names in kirtan all together. He sees that, and it puts that smile on Krishna's face. And that smile is what relieves all the burdens of misery that we have in our lives. Being in this material world, how many of you like being here? I mean, not here at the temple. This is wonderful. But I mean in this material world, going through this lifetime. Has anybody gone through with no problems yet? Oh, there's someone back there. You have a nice life?
Yes.
You're happy? No problems. Really? Wow, you are a special person. Never get sick? You go to the doctor sometimes? Little miserable though, right? When you're feeling sick. There's so many miseries, really. We might pretend that we don't. One time Srila Prabhupada was giving a class, and he said, death is the biggest misery. And one boy in the audience said, I'm not afraid of death. Prabhupada was saying, everyone is afraid of death. That is the one thing everyone... He said, I'm not afraid of death. Prabhupada said, oh, if I took gun and point at you, you would not be afraid. And then he sat back down. Because sometimes we can be in a bit of illusion, thinking that we're not miserable, we don't have any problems. You know, quite often when we think like that, one comes, assuredly, some problem or something. But, you know, we can be in illusion thinking, no, this is a wonderful place. But at some point, we're going to be smashed. We're going to have something happen that makes for misery. Because this material world is made like that. What is that verse? Akalayama Shashvatam? Dukalayama Shashvatam. It's a place of misery where repeated birth and death take place. So we want to get out of here forever. We want to end it here. We want to go back where Krishna and Balaram have their plow and club and flute and rope for tying the cows. And they are having so much fun in the pasturing grounds. When you read Krishna book, it's just amazing all the fun they're having there. And tomorrow, Balaram's birthday party is really fun. And Krishna's birthday party in a week and a bit is majorly fun. It goes on for so long. In fact, till midnight. Amazing. So much fun. And there you see Radha and Krishna, and they're dancing. Krishna plays his flute. So many nice flowers, they have so many friends, they do so many fun things, they're joking with one another, the gopis will have their pots of yogurt taking to sell, and the boys are throwing stones and breaking and all falling down, and then they will have arguments between each other, and yet they're having so much fun. It's so fun. The boys will go, when the mothers aren't looking, they'll climb up on the grinding mortar and steal yogurt and butter from different gopis' homes and feed the monkeys and feed each other. They're just having fun. And that's where we really need to be in the spiritual world. That is our That is where we are meant to be. Just like a fish, Prophet used to say, a fish out of water will never be happy. What can you do for a fish that's out of the water to make it happy? There's nothing. We used to have a drama that we used to do called the fish out of water. And they would give the fish silky cloth and put it in a beautiful bed and drive it around in a great looking car, and the fish is just like, it's dying, right? It has no air. So then as soon as they put the fish back in the water, oh, this is it. And that's us. We're here in this material world. We're struggling with existence. Rains too much. It doesn't rain enough. Like at the beginning of the spring, no rain. Our grass is dying. We had to find more hay to feed our cows. No grass. Now so much rain every day. Rain, rain, rain. Right? Some places too much rain. It's starting to flood. So always something. Always something. But in the spiritual world, just right. Even when there's heavy rains, Krishna lifts up Govardhan Hill and says, come on under, come on under. Everybody comes under and they have such a wonderful time there. No one's hungry, no one's thirsty, no one needs to sleep. They're just seeing Krishna. And all the cows are there, everyone's there. Then when the rain stops, they all go back. And so wonderful. So that's our real home. That's where we come from, and that's where we need to go back to. And then we'll feel like that fish. You've seen that picture where Krishna's embracing that cowherd boy. You know, that's us. When we go back, it's like, where have you been? You know, you're missing out some of the fun. But it's just for us, it's been millions of years, so many lifetimes. We've been traveling through this birth and death, who knows how long. Even if we went through every life form, it's 8,400,000. And we might have gone through some a few times. I'm sure I've gone through many of them over and over because I'm so dim not to catch the gist of where I'm supposed to be going. Right? So we've been here a long time. So now it's time to get out and go back. You know, go back to Godhead. Go back home. Actually enjoy life in reality. Confirmed. So, and the way to do that is calling out to Krishna and serving Krishna. It's such an easy process and so sublime. It's actually, that's where enjoyment lies. You know, when you're serving the Lord, when you're making your home a place of worship, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about how when he goes home, he sees the Tulsi plant there. She's the servant of Krishna. The water that's bathing the deity is like the Ganges water flowing in his home. Everyone there are servants of the Lord. They're all serving Krishna. And that's the same in the temple. It's the same at your home. And then your home becomes Vaikuntha. Then just like that young man back there, there's no suffering. Right? There's no suffering. And even the little suffering that comes, it's all right. I'm not worried. I have to get this offering for Krishna. I have to make the burfi for Krishna. I have to go milk Krishna's cows so that he has yogurt and milk. You know, I have my service that I have to do. I have to go to work so that I can buy things for the Lord, you know, to make my home wonderful. So anything we can do for Krishna. We can do for the Lord. And then everything becomes perfect and complete. And then we make the complete circle perfect. When we're trying to be the enjoyer, it doesn't work. Not so good. We aren't even made for that. Confirmed again. We're not made to be the enjoyers. When we try, has anybody tried to eat lots of ice cream? I remember the boys on the bus tour. Madhura would buy them tons of ice cream, right?
okay, you guys can eat. And they're like, yes. And they start eating, and they're each taking one tub, and they start off. And then they're going, ugh. And then, no, you got to finish it. It's going to melt. You know, some drop out. Others are still going. But by the end, no one wants ice cream after that for a while. It doesn't, they can't do it. And any kind of enjoyment, if you think about it, any type of enjoyment, if you keep doing it, it soon is going to make you sick, or somehow you're going to be so sick of that enjoyment. It no longer is enjoyment. It becomes suffering. So that is how this material world is made. And in Brahma Samhita, it explains that Durga Devi has her prongs. And there's three prongs that she uses. And all of the living entities in this material world are poked with those three prongs. And those three prongs are Adi Devic, Adi Bhotic, and Adi Atmic. So these three sufferings, kleshas, are here, and they're always here. Because she's like the prison guard in charge of this universe, to make sure no one goes back to Godhead that doesn't have the qualification. And what is the qualification? Anyone have any guesses on what the qualification is to get back to Godhead, to get out of this material world?
The intense desire to go back to Godhead?
Yes, that's an important one. The intense desire to go back, to get out of here, to do what it takes to go back to Godhead. Anything else? Having no material desires. That's a hard one. But actually, that intense desire starts burning up the other material desires. I've noticed that. I mean, some things in myself that I've had that I thought, oh, I'll never get rid of this desire. It's just always there. And then somehow, it just suddenly I notice, oh, I haven't thought about that in so long. I don't even have an attraction for that anymore. Everybody experienced something like that? They have that experience? Oh. I'm sure everyone experiences that. Devotional service, it just burns that up. The desire to please Krishna. Anything else? Yeah, humility, getting rid of the pride. Yeah. That also, through service, that keeps us understanding we're a servant, not the master. Right? And that's a humble position. Amrita? Submitting ourselves to a pure devotee. That's a very important thing. That we can't do this by ourselves. Who would have known anything about devotional service here without Srila Prabhupada coming? Anybody? You what? That's right, and we learned that from Srila Prabhupada, just giving up all varieties of religion and surrendering to Krishna. That's very important. Prabhu?
Love.
Yeah, what is true love? So much confirmation. True love. Love. We're thinking love. Someone asked the other day, what is love? You know, people talk about love. Oh, I love you. I love my dog. I love my children. I love my husband, my wife. I love. What is this love? Sometimes it's lust, yeah. Or something, Prabhupada said one time that it's like a merchant. You know, I get from this one and they get from me, so we have a loving relationship, but as soon as that goes south, then, I don't want to be around you. You know, sometimes it ends in murder. You know, you have husband and wife, oh, they're so loving, getting married, and then in the end, one of them kills the other, and, you know, it happens. So, that isn't true love. Real love is with the Supreme Lord. That's real love. And all of these things, through devotional service, we can get that coming into our lives without any extra endeavor. You know, Srila Prabhupada gave us such a simple method. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with the method for this age. And for this age, the method to get out of here is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is how we can escape this place and actually find real love and real happiness. I don't know if any of you noticed, but happiness here, I don't want to be negative or anything, but I'm just trying to be realistic. In this material world, there is some happiness, but it's kind of like, Srila Prabhupada said, it's like the dunking stool. I don't know if you've ever studied history or something. I know in England, and probably America as well, actually, because British came here to settle. They had a thing called a dunking stool. So if you did something really bad in the community, they would put you on this, strap you on this board, and put it over a log, and right next to a pond or river, or what, and they would lift it up, and you would go under. So you're under the water, and they're holding you under there. And you're not breathing. And you can imagine, have you ever been stuck under? One time I was hit by a wave in the ocean. And I went down and it swirled me around and I couldn't figure out which way was up or which way was down. And it's frightening when you're not going to breathe. You know that you're under the water, you can't breathe in. And you know, you only have a certain amount of time before you can get some air. So that was the whole idea. You would keep the person under, and then suddenly you'd let them up, and they'd go, and then down again. So Prabhupada said that lifting up was considered happiness. That's our happiness. We're alleviated from the suffering, so we think this is happiness. But
really, spiritual life is a whole, can you hear?
Yeah.
Spiritual life is a whole another happiness. It isn't like the relief of suffering. That is part and parcel of devotional service. It's the relief of suffering. But the happiness that's found in spiritual life is something that no one can imagine. We can't think of it in material terms because there's nothing in this material world that can give that same feeling of total happiness. And the total happiness comes when we go back to Godhead. That's when we'll, now we're getting little taste as we surrender, as we do service, as we continue to chant our japa, our sadhana. But at some point, we're going to go back to Godhead, and that's when happiness. We have these tastes that keep us going, but the real happiness is there. No more suffering. We're back in the water. Truly happy. So I'll stop there. If there's any questions or additions?
In the beginning of your talk, you talked about how you can see Krishna smiling as you act at a certain way. I don't imagine that you meant that literally, because that on our level, we probably
I don't agree, simply because I don't think it's a material thing that everyone seeing the same smile on that day. It's not by material happening, but it's by each of our servants, actually. The prophet occasionally would ask the Vajari, what is the mood of the meeting here? You know, and one who serves Krishna, they have more than two sides.
And I've noticed, I'm sure a lot of devotees here notice sometimes, if one day Balaram was really in Krishna Balaram, I've never, Krishna usually looks kind of stern and meager, like, no nonsense. But this one day, he was really so much. And I went to the Vyari and I said, what did we do? Krishna is smiling like anything. She said, I know the thing. It happens. You know, actually, the deity is not just stone and not just sweet. He is a person. And he has personality and he can interact with us. You know, one time, quite a while back, I was living at the manor and I was just little Radhagopananda. And there was a devotee there who was making all these beautiful, like on the side of the altar, these beautiful waterfalls and things that would go down next to him. And he would make this beautiful forest scene around the deity. And he had made this waterfall. And I had this dream that Radhagopananda, Chokhtan Radhagopananda, got so cool that there somehow the water came down on top of him. So I was. Went to him, this was like a few days before it was going to happen, and I went to the devotee that was doing it. I told a few other devotees, but that's a dream, don't worry about it. You know. I'm going, but it's so real. And I went out to check in the barn where he was making the waterfall, and I said, no, I'm trying it out, it works perfectly. But okay, maybe I'm just a neophyte, I don't know. So Sunday came, and I dressed TV. Started the waterfall, and I looked fine. So I went to chant my japa, and within about a half an hour, someone comes running down. Mataji, you have to come back. The water's all over little Radhagopananda. You have to come and change them again. And there was this little stone, and the water had gone over this little stone, so this tiny little fountain was going on, and you couldn't even see it, but soon as clothes started dripping and everything. There was an interaction with Krishna. He was interacting with me, you know, giving me some anxiety and then proving that it's real. Krishna's really there. He's real. You know, and he can interact with us according to our desires. If we serve Krishna, if we are Krishna, he interacts with us. Prabhupada said, don't think that Krishna is an ungrateful master. He is there and he's interacting with everyone who does a little service. And according to our desire to serve Krishna, he reciprocates with us.
So, there's three kinds of material world and all suffering. But I think the greatest suffering is to have realized Krishna and to have to avoid it. Prabhupada described how man is going to go to Krishna and the only one thing in life. And I feel like that's probably the only 10 sufferings you have.
So when you have Krishna and he goes away, you stay in
love. Yes. And in the material world, temporary pleasures, you can't forget the Krishna. But in the spiritual world, you can't forget the Krishna's awakening.
Yes.
So what does Krishna like to tell you to close?
I think, you know that intense desire that he was talking about, that heats the fire up, right? When you're missing something, then the desire for it intensifies. So when Krishna, Narada Muni, Rupa Maharaj, they all had seen Krishna, and then I'm sorry to say, but in this lifetime, you won't see me again. And their whole life was just, let me get back there, let me get that dharma again. It intensifies our sadhana and our resolution.
Why can't we all think that Krishna's name and always be with him and come to him?
Why did we come here in the first place? That is a new question that we have to figure out. that we're going through, this is like the school of hard knocks. And for the devotee Krishna specifically designed our lives to get us out of here, pry us out of all of our attachments. And sometimes they look pretty painful. I mean, I've been through some really hard knocks. But later, while it's going on, you're going through so much suffering. Why is Krishna doing this? And then after you look back, you go, whoa, he humbled me, he made it perfectly, so that I could not wiggle out of it, and I had to learn this lesson. And really, I'm such a dummy. Well, at least myself, you probably are. I'm such a dummy, I'm such a tiny head, that I can stay in the secure world and think that I'm enjoying something. You know. So, you know, we have to go through that just to get our intense desire to get out of it. If we weren't suffering, we'd say, cattle, man, this is so big. I could just keep enjoying myself and I could come to the temple sometime and I'll just enjoy. Right? No suffering. No interest in my enjoyment. Yeah, I'm a Supreme Lord, but I'll come here to look tired. Right? And then we're never going to get out of here. We're going to keep getting worse. So really, that is our greatest, like Kingsley said, suffering is my greatest pleasure. Even though it's suffering, but later you learn, it's actually a pleasure because it means Krishna is pulling you back. He's making some arrangements and you're feeling the sense of material life that comes back. Yeah. And so then it becomes that pleasure. I remember one time thinking, all these devotees are getting so many hardships, and not me. Why is Krishna ignoring me? And right after, I got one of the biggest hardships I've ever had in my life. And during it, I was thinking, whoa, I'm so happy. But actually, it's such a relief. It's showing me the real reality of the material world. I was in a beautiful place, chatting Hare Krishna, so much nice there was and all, but I was still enjoying the things I was enjoying. You know, and Krishna is a death at every step. And it's coming to your door, you know, and it was my son. He had a car accident, and he was just 3.5 years old. And it was such a shock. Such a shock. But it taught me so many things after that shock. And it was so intense, the suffering. I remember saying to my husband, do you think this will ever happen again? And he said, well, you've got 5 children. You know? And I thought, but then shortly after, I realized Krishna really helped me. He showed me enough, and it was such an amazing thing. I was just remembering this a couple days ago that we were there and he was dying. You know? They didn't even give him blood. The first 24 hours, they were sure he was going to die. So we stayed there chanting, you know, staying with him in the room, chanting. And this lady came to help us. She didn't want us committing suicide or something. You know, they and then a social worker. So then my husband preaches to her about the body and the soul and how important it is for us to be there to chant with him because death is the biggest test, it's our final, so, you know, and she's like, oh. But then she watched us and we were there all the time. Like all the other children in that ward, nobody was there. They'd come and visit and leave. And we stayed there 24/7 dancing. So she saw that we loved him. It wasn't like we were, not a body, soul, you know. And then she came back and she said, you have any books about this? Maybe I could help other people, you know? So, you know, then I realized this was such a test, but it pulled me higher in my spiritual life. And so those miseries are really blessings. And at some point, we'll see them as blessings. see that even though it's a miserable thing, it's a horrible thing, you would never wish it on anyone or yourself, but when it comes, you can see it as Krishna's blessing, because somehow it breaks the ties of this material world, and this thought you could never And that's why Krishna does, and that's why you can see it as love. You probably say it's like the lover sometimes bites the lover, and it hurts, but it's considered love. So that's Krishna's love. It's like a bite, and it hurts, but it can be seen as Krishna's love. It's eradicating some of our attachments that we have. Okay, we'll stop there. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.